Hello, mystery and thriller fans, and welcome to episode 4 of Emily C. Whitson's Beneath the Marigolds. My name is Meredith, and this is Camp Cat Unwrapped. Previously on Beneath the Marigolds, the list of suspects grows with the arrival of Luca, Reese's abusive ex-boyfriend who introduced Reese to loan sharks before he left for the retreat. Anne learns Lamb was sleeping with contestant Trixie in addition to Reese. And what's worse, according to Anne's colleague, Ned, Lamb never returned home from this retreat either.
31. Reese,
can I talk to you?
Lamb appeared on the mansion's front doorstep. His hands were in his pockets. His head hung low. I had been searching for him all day, desperate to talk about the night before. But now that he was here, it was hard to form words. Yeah, come sit down. I gestured to the spot on the stoop next to Teddy. He was in the middle of the space while I was on the left, so Lamb had no choice but to sandwich Teddy between us.
Hey man, what's up?
Teddy chirped.
I've been better, Teddy.
There was an awkward pause, so Lamb was more direct.
Do you mind if I have a minute with Reese, alone?
It took a moment, but finally Teddy read the room.
Oh, yeah, man, of course.
He sauntered inside. Once the door clicked shut, Lamb reached for the ice pack on my eye.
Do you mind?
I shook my head. I watched as his eyes grew wide at the sight of my swollen face.
Reese, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize you were that close behind me.
I know. I shouldn't have tried to get in the middle of it. Lamb shifted his weight.
I shouldn't have lost my temper like that. It's unacceptable.
I flexed my bruised knuckles from hitting Nick earlier. On a side note, no one tells you how much it hurts to hit someone. Like, it really hurts. I can't really point fingers, I said. Literally. Lamb gingerly wrapped my injured fist in his.
I guess we're two peas in a pod then.
No more hitting? I asked.
No more hitting,
he agreed.
No more violence.
After a moment of silence, my hand in his, he continued.
So what's the deal with you guys anyway?
I sighed and rotated the ice pack on my eye, debating how much to say. I decided to give him a short, glossy version of our relationship, leaving out the part where Luca's friends were threatening to break my kneecaps if I didn't pay them interest on a loan. After I finished running through the story, Lamb still seemed shocked by the assault, so I guess I didn't do too good a job at glossing.
Reese, that's terrible. He can't be here if he's violent.
That was good logic. But I didn't want to antagonize Luca and give him a reason to disclose my location to his friends. It was a long time ago, and he's apologized. Everyone deserves a second chance. Besides, there are a million people around, so I don't think he'll try anything here. I can lock my door at night. Lamb didn't look convinced, but he dropped it for the moment. I took a deep breath and plucked up the courage to bring up the topic I really wanted to discuss. Did you kiss Trixie? I asked. Lamb's eyebrows raised in shock.
What? No. Why would you think that?
Christina said you did.
What?
His voice raised.
Why would she say that?
I don't know, but she seemed pretty sure. I shrugged. I looked at my feet. It's okay if you did. I know we're not dating or anything. I was just surprised because, I don't know. I thought we had something. I flinched. I sounded so stupid. I was glad the ice pack covered my profile, but Lamb started to remove it again. He was delicate with it, like a surgeon. He put his hands on my cheeks, careful not to touch my injury, and he turned my face so I would look at him.
We do have something. Something really special.
He wasn't blinking.
I don't want to do anything to jeopardize that.
He leaned toward me, hesitantly. I didn't back away, so he leaned in further until his lips met mine. It was a soft kiss, just what I needed. I don't know if I fully believed him, but I wanted to, more than anything.
32. Anne. I'm not sure what she said to you, but I'm betting she deserved it. Nick laughs as he catches me escaping the vicinity of the infinity pool. My skin feels wet. I want to get inside, escape the humidity. All night, I've felt as if I've been swaddled in a warm, wet blanket. Nick touches my wrist when I don't respond.
Do you have a second to catch up?
He presses. Yes, I say. Yes, I do. Let's start with why you lied to me.
His face contorts. What are you talking about?
Reese didn't attack you? By his expression, I can tell Trixie was telling the truth. You said she was happy, no problems. That doesn't sound happy to me. Nick pauses, exchanges a glance with a nearby handler. I have the distinct feeling that I'm being watched. Played. Do you think I'm an idiot? I say as I point to the handler. I can see you looking at each other.
No, he sighs. No, I don't think you're an idiot. Not at all. Will you just listen to me? I'll explain.
He walks to the periphery of the backyard of the mansion, pulls a pack of cigarettes from his sport coat. I cross my arms, tap my feet on the lanai. My need for answers outweighs my pride, so I follow. When we are alone, out of earshot, he hands me a cigarette. I only think about refusing for a split second. This will be my last one, I tell myself.
I didn't lie, he says, as he lowers the flame to the butt of my cigarette. My hands are shaking, so he holds them steady. I just didn't tell you everything. Reese did seem happy from what I saw, apart from that night.
Why would you not tell me she attacked you? That's a pretty fucking important detail. I take a deep drag, praying for the dopamine rush to hit me quickly.
Because I thought it would embarrass you.
Embarrass me? Why would that embarrass me?
Because she thought I was your ex-boyfriend. It took me a while to put it together that you were the Anne she was talking about. I thought your name was just a coincidence. Your reaction to me that first night was a coincidence. Until you mentioned you were friends with Reese. That's when I put two and two together.
He exhales, a cloud of smoke distorting his image. Oh, is all I can muster. Before I can stop it, a portion of my rage directs at Reese. I admire her loyalty, her unwavering friendship, but sometimes she can be so unbelievably stupid.
You want to tell me about him?
Not really.
What? He snickers. So you can keep secrets, but I can't?
My mouth tightens. He's right. And I need him on my side. I need him for information. I'll spit it out quickly. He was the first guy I really cared about, and the relationship sort of imploded. It was a rough breakup. Happens to everyone. I'm not sure why Reese made such a big deal about it.
Why did it implode?
I take a long drag, let the smoke fill my lungs until it pushes everything else out. I developed a drinking problem, and then my parents died in a car accident. He purses his lips, nods solemnly.
That's rough. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I laugh, a small giggle, then I cut it off. Sorry, sometimes I do that when I feel uncomfortable. I think it's the nicotine.
So where's the guy now?
I start to chuckle uncontrollably. I hold my stomach as the muscles tighten. He's married to my best friend. 33. Anne. Nick doesn't laugh. Not even a flicker of a smile.
How did that happen?
I'll need another cigarette for that story. He hands me one, lights it.
As I breathe in, I organize my thoughts. It's been 9 years since I discovered Honey's affair, but the memories still take the wind out of me. I flick ash from the butt of the cigarette onto the patio. I desperately want a drink. I'd kill for just one repercussion-free sip. Actually, it's not even much of a story. My friend Honey started dating him after we broke up. I found out a year later, which is when she claims the relationship started. But I've always wondered if they got together sooner. She says they both tried to ignore the mutual attraction, but they fell in love. It was inescapable. I think back on the moment I discovered they were seeing each other. It was a brutally cold day in Nashville, a day where the wind cracks your skin open. Reese wanted to get some flowers to have a little summer in the middle of winter, so we went to a boutique garden center near her apartment. I'd never been to the place before. It was nowhere near where I lived or where Honey lived, which is maybe why Honey chose to shop there. She thought I'd never see her. Honey and I had grown distant since my relationship with him started. This was partially because I was consumed by him. I didn't have time for anything or anyone else. I was like a statue that had been brought to life. I saw and felt the world in ways I had never experienced, and I never wanted to go back to the way things were. I remember watching him sleep one morning, the daylight creeping in around the edges of my curtain. He was so peaceful, so beautiful. I remember thinking, so this is it. This is what it feels like to be in love. But Honey and I also grew apart because she didn't like my new drinking habits. She didn't even recognize me, she said. Honey, I'm just having some fun, I argued. I never have fun or take breaks. I'm always studying or working or worrying about something. Why can't you just be happy for me? I am happy for you, she pleaded. But I know you, Anne. You can't do anything halfway. I'm just worried, that's all. But if you're happy, I'm happy. I am fucking happy, I screamed and slammed the door in her face. I started ignoring her calls. I was burning with rage at her callousness, at her hypocrisy. I had stood on the sidelines for years as Honey went through a string of relationships, always telling me that I'd find someone someday. And now that that someday had come, Honey couldn't stand not to be the center of attention. I noticed how she studied my ex, how she peered at him with longing, how she gazed at our embraces with envy. It made me want to tear her hair out. But subconsciously, I was angry because she was right. I was spiraling toward a place of no return. I could feel my wings melting as I got closer and closer to the sun. And I didn't have the humility, not at that time at least, to ask for help. Like everything else in my life, I thought I could fix my problem with hard work and sheer force of will. Besides, I couldn't have a problem. Not me, not Anne, the model student and child. I was a normal person with a normal life and a normal family. And the more I failed to turn things around, the more I drank, and the angrier I became. And then one morning, I woke up in a soaking wet bed. No recollection of the night before. I was disgusted. I was disgusting. The shame burned my skin, little flames biting at my neck. I noticed my boyfriend sleeping on the floor. How many times had I apologized? 100? 1,000? Every morning, I promised to be better. And every night, I was worse than the day before. I wrote a note telling him I'd buy him a new mattress, again, and then I grabbed my purse and left. It wasn't until I reached the nearest gas station, with bare feet and tear-stained cheeks, that I realized I'd left my phone in his room. I made a call on a payphone, digging for the few coins I had remaining in my purse.
When I finally found enough change among the cocktail of drugs, I called my parents. I asked them to come and get me. I was in trouble, I told them. I needed them. They told me to stay right there. They would come straight away. They were so good to me, and I cried harder because I didn't deserve their kindness. But they never came. Some teenager was texting and driving. On the highway, no less. My parents tried to avoid her car, I was told, but it was an overcorrection and their car flipped. Not once, not twice, but three times. They died instantly. It was the most beautiful spring day, not a cloud in sight. And I remember thinking that something so terrible couldn't possibly happen on a day like that. So when I saw Honey in that nursery a year later, her arm around my ex's waist, slap happy smiles across their faces, I felt it was a punishment I had earned.
"And you're still friends?" Nick asks. "And her name is Honey?"
An expression crosses his face, one I can't put my finger on. "Yeah," I swallow. "Yeah." It was hard at first, but after my parents died, Honey was the closest thing to family I had left. I couldn't afford to lose anyone else. Nick taps out his cigarette in an attempt to hide his disbelief.
"So, if you and Honey are still friends, why did Reese act like she hadn't seen me, or rather your ex-boyfriend, in a decade?"
"I don't think she has." I try to remember if there's an encounter I'm overlooking. Honestly, I haven't even seen him much since the wedding. He's sort of a don't-ask, don't-tell thing between Honey and me.
"She rarely sees Honey," I continue. "They don't like each other much. Different crowds, different interests. It is weird that Reese would get so angry about something that happened so long ago. She was having a rough go of it before the retreat, so maybe her own stress tipped her over the edge." I remember my conversation with the sweaty dance director, the encounter with Reese's mother, and I shiver. Nick rubs his chin before speaking.
"Well, it sounds like Reese is a loyal friend."
"She is," I whisper, so quietly it's almost inaudible. Nick takes my hand, massages my thumb. His gaze is so intense it makes me uncomfortable.
"I'm sorry, Anne, about everything."
I give a terse smile, a quick bob of the head. If I speak, I know my voice will break. He leans forward then, and because of the nicotine, or the lack of sleep, or the uncomfortable memories, I let him kiss me. Perhaps I understand Reese's romances more than I thought I did.
34. Reese. The next week came and went with relative ease, thank goodness. No physical altercations, no blood, no drama. The bruises on my eye and fist started to fade, and with Magda's help, I hid the lingering discoloration with makeup. At cocktail parties and between dates, some of the other participants started to talk to me again. They were hesitant, after everything, but with time, their apprehension faded. That's the thing about time. It can dull just about anything. One of these days, I'd look back on this period of my life and laugh. Wasn't the host of that retreat just so strange? Wasn't it just so funny when I got in the middle of a fight and got a black eye? Ha ha! Oh, good times. Nick was also embroiled in his own drama, so that helped take the spotlight off me. He was interested in two different women, or, more accurately, they were both interested in him, and he couldn't decide which one he should seriously pursue. Now, I know I'm a bit biased due to his doppelganger status, but to me, he was your typical want-what-you-can't-have guy. As soon as one of his love interests' attention waned, his attention was piqued. It seemed very unfair. He seemed very unfair. but it was like watching a car accident. You couldn't not look. It dominated the chatter among participants. Conversations typically went something like this.
Can you believe how Nick is acting?
Such an asshole.
You can't have your cake and eat it too. That's not how it works.
I just feel bad for the women. They are being played.
I want one of them to grow a backbone and move on.
Christina was not immune to this attraction. Where the action went, she followed. You'd think she would have invested most of her time in couples that were doing well, as that was her retreat's supposed mission. But that wasn't the case. Not at all. In fact, she seemed almost annoyed if you had no problems to discuss. During one of our talks, which I came to dread more and more with each session, she wouldn't let me leave until I shared something negative about Lam.
So, Lam, she had said, tell me how that's going.
Much better, I said. It had been 7 days since the clash with Luca, and Lam had been excessively gentle with me. Every touch felt like a whisper, a piece of silk. And when we were together, he only had eyes for me. He barely acknowledged anyone else. On the surface, everything was great. But deep down, I still wondered about Trixie. Plus, I hadn't seen Luca since his fight with Lam, and with every passing day, I grew more and more anxious that he had talked to his friends. I jumped at the slightest sound, wondering if it was them coming to find me. Of course, I wasn't going to tell Christina any of this.
No more fights? She prodded.
Nope, none. It's been smooth sailing.
What about his dates with other women? Does that bother you?
I understand it's part of the process.
Journey, she interrupted.
Just like everything else, our attire, our food, our dates, she was very specific about words we could use. The word process was a no-no.
Excuse me, I corrected myself.
I understand other dates are part of the journey, so I've made peace with it. That was a lie. I was not cool with the other dates, but it was in the contract that we had a one-on-one date with every participant before getting more serious with one. Lam was diligent about reassuring me before and after each date, telling me it was just a formality, that he only had eyes for me. The concern still nagged at me, though, worming its way into my thoughts and mood.
But what about his dates with Trixie? He seems interested, does he not?
I sighed, telling myself she was just trying to get a rise out of me. I don't know why she did that, but she did. She was a very, very odd woman. He says he's not. He says you kept pairing them up despite his wishes.
Is that what he tells you? She asked.
Yes.
And you believe him?
Yes, I repeated, but with less confidence. After our session, I gave myself a mental pep talk. Don't let the strange woman get to you, I thought. She's just interested in some drama. Things between you and Lam have been great, perfect even. No need to worry about something that doesn't exist. I repeated these musings to myself as I walked down the long corridor to my room. The talk with Christina and the endless yo-yo between creeping doubt and self-reassurance was making me tired. I fantasized about the lushness of my bed and the temptation to sleep the rest of the afternoon away. I didn't normally take naps. In fact, I didn't sleep much at all. I could usually get by on 5 hours of sleep or so. I never wanted to miss out on the sunshine, the action, the promise of a new day. There was always something to do and someone to talk to. But the long nights and early mornings were getting to me. My daydream about sleep was interrupted when someone snatched my wrist and pulled me into the closet room. I took in the surroundings. The room was a replica of mine. White bed with a white carpet, white armchairs and a white marble bathroom. Another participant's room, surely. Then I registered the person who seized me, Luca. His nose was still swollen from Lam's punch. His eye socket was a sickly yellow. The cut on his lip and the bridge of his nose were still visible.
Luca, what are you doing?
I stammered. I needed to talk to him, but I was still afraid to be alone with the guy.
Shh,
he said as he put his finger to his lips and closed the bedroom door.
We need to talk.
My heart felt like it would explode out of my chest. I could scream if I needed to. Someone would hear me before something happened. He seemed to read my mind as he walked to the bed and sat on the edge.
I'll sit over here if it'll make you feel better.
My heart rate did seem to slow with the distance. That gave me a running start if I needed one.
Did you?
I faltered. I mean, did you tell your friends where I am?
What?
He seemed to have completely forgotten about that very important detail.
No, no. I shouldn't have gotten you involved with them in the first place. They think you skipped town, and since it isn't a lot of money, I think they've stopped looking.
I didn't realize I had been holding my breath. Thank you, Luca. I sighed. The tension I'd been holding in my shoulders seemed to ease a little.
No, there's something else I need to tell you.
He eyed the door.
But I'm still afraid someone can hear us from here.
Yes, I thought. That's a good thing.
Let's go in the bathroom. We can turn the faucets on.
He raised his hands.
I promise I won't hurt you.
I shook my head.
Please? I could get in a lot of trouble for sharing this.
He took a step forward, and I moved backward. I felt the door handle on my back, and I wrapped my hand around it. He looked desperate.
Reese, you're making this more difficult than it needs to be. I really have changed. I went to a therapist, anger management sessions. I'm not the same guy you dated.
I shook my head again, gripped the door handle tighter. He dropped his shoulders and lowered his voice.
Okay, fine. Look, there's something you don't know about your relationship with Lam.
What? I tried to sound casual, but of course this piqued my interest.
It's not...
His eyes darted around frantically.
It's not real.
My stomach sank. Luca wasn't the most reliable source, but it was too coincidental for both he and Christina to say the same thing. So, you're saying all this stuff he's been telling me, us having something special, it's not true?
Exactly.
35. Anne. That night, I dream of Reese. The dream starts on Faux Islands Beach. I'm walking alone. Despite the humidity and the heat, I'm not sweating. I'm not even warm. I feel empty and cold. I eventually wade into the ocean, drawn by some unseen force into the water. Just let me drown, I think. Just make it stop. But my reflection in the water gives me pause, waking me from my trance. My eyes, my mother's green eyes, are gone, hidden behind a veil of black. There is another woman in the water's reflection, lying supine on the beach. When I turn around, I see that the woman is Reese. She wears a tattered white sundress, the shreds of which are blowing in the breeze. Her eyes are closed, her skin pale, her red hair dirty and tangled. She is motionless. She must be dead. I'm afraid to get closer. But I know I have to. When I'm within an arm's reach, she wakes violently, her eyelids shuddering open like the lens of a camera. Her eyes are as black as coal. No pupil, no iris, no color. Just like mine. I jump back in terror. She cocks her head at me and sits up on her elbows, her black eyes following me. I crab walk backward, trying to get away as fast as I can. How's it going to end? Reese asks. Her voice is faded, distant, like an echo. I'm too afraid to respond, so I keep crawling farther and farther away from her. I pause when I feel someone's legs against my back. I jump at the touch, scream. It's my mother, but she is long past dead. Her skin hanging off her bones like sheets on a clothesline. She points at her wrist, to the watch she loved so much. Time is ticking, she announces. I wake with a gasp, drenched in sweat.
I throw the sheets off and sit up with a start. My hair is sticking to my neck. It was just a nightmare, I reassure myself. Just a nightmare. Once I catch my breath, I realize I feel hungover. Between the nightmare, my vulnerability with Nick, and my sleepless nights worrying about Reese, I'm left feeling hollow. I can still smell the smoke from the cigarettes on my hands, in my hair, on my clothes. It makes my head spin. I take the empty glass by my bed and head to the bathroom, where I fill my cup once, twice, three times with tap water. I drink like there's no tomorrow. After a long shower where I rub my skin raw, I head downstairs to the kitchen. I'm normally the first one there, so I'm startled to see Nick with multiple glasses and plates of food. Good morning, he chirps. Morning, I say as I take a seat across from him. Are you hungry? No, some of this is for you, he smiles as he slides a mug toward me. I got you espresso. 4 shots, right? I nod as I take the cup. I notice you also like to put ice in your espresso, which is sort of strange, but I got you a cup anyway. It's normally too hot, I murmur. And finally, he continues, I got you a bagel. I know you normally skip breakfast, but I've got to admit, I'm a little worried about all that caffeine on your empty stomach. So I figure some bread can soak up the acid. Thank you. I feel a flush creep up my neck. That's very observant of you. Anything for my girl, he says with a wink. The phrase echoes in my head. My girl. The words, the gesture, the secrets, the kiss. It's all too much. It feels wrong. So are you excited for your date today? He continues. Yes, I stammer. Yeah, it'll be interesting. With all the excitement of last night, I completely forgot about my date with Teddy. I requested time with him so I could inquire about Reese, and I figured he'd be more coherent during the day. I also asked if we could hike the northern part of the island, as I want to get a closer look at the house for the crew that was pointed out to me by the pilot. I can't run the distance, so a one-on-one date is the only way I can think to investigate. To my surprise, I was granted both wishes. If Christina were trying to hide something there, surely she wouldn't approve, right? Of course, she did allow me to come on the retreat, knowing my background and connection to Reese. So if something did happen on the island, she's either incredibly stupid or incredibly arrogant. Or I'm on the wrong track altogether. No, I can't think like that. What do you think about Teddy? Nick asks. Truthfully, I don't know that much about him. He seems okay, I guess. Maybe a bit of a mess, I admit, as I tear off a piece of bagel. Before I put it in my mouth, my stomach turns. I force myself to eat anyway. If I lose any more weight, I'm going to start having health issues. He does like to party, Nick agrees. His smile fades, and he studies me while I chew. Just be careful, okay? Why? Do you know something about him? No, nothing like that. He's just been getting a little more out of hand lately. I scan his face for nonverbal clues, hidden meanings. Like I'd read a client, I search for subtle shifts in speech, evasions, lies. But he maintains eye contact and an even tone. He appears to be telling the truth, so I take his words at face value. I'll be careful, I promise. Back in my room, safely hidden in the water closet, I take out my phone. I'm hoping for a text from Ned. There are still so many loose ends that need to be investigated. What's Nick's background? Who is Christina's guarantor? Beverly Wellington? Is this Beverly aware of the island's happenings? Or is she more of a silent investor? Is she even a real person? Is there proof that Christina worked on the set of Happily Ever After? If so, did she go by Christina Wellington? And most important, is there an update on Lam? Has he been located? I would follow up on all these questions myself, but I don't have the resources at the moment. I tried using my phone's internet, but it's been spotty ever since I researched Hawaiian recording laws. To my disappointment, there's nothing from Ned, so I text him my daily update. I proceed to filter through my email to see if there's an urgent notice from a client, and my heart stops when I see a message from one of the founding partners from the previous day. The subject reads, "Inappropriate use of company resources." My finger trembles as I click on the message. Time sent, 3:06 p.m., December 23rd, 2018. Message. Anne, it has come to our attention that you've been using one of the new associates, Ned Hargrove, to investigate the disappearance of your friend Reese Marigold. I don't need to tell you that the use of his time on your personal affairs is highly unprofessional and against company policy. The other partners and I will discuss an appropriate course of action, and we will schedule a meeting after the holiday break to discuss next steps with you. Be on the lookout for a meeting date and time. My palms have become so sweaty and my hands so shaky that my phone slips through my fingers and lands with a thud on the bathroom floor. I see it crack, the breaks in the glass crawling up the screen like vines. My entire body feels hot. The room starts to spin. And for the second time in 2 days, I throw up. When I'm finished, I rest my head on the lid of the toilet and laugh.
36. Reese. After my encounter with Luca, I was too riled up to take a nap. My pulse was pounding in my ears. A flush crept up my neck. I needed to cool down, get some water. I had almost made it to the kitchen when I heard a familiar voice coming from the hallway for the crew. Lam. I followed the sound. Why would he be in a crew member's room? Did Christina move their talk there? If so, maybe I could eavesdrop, hear what he said about me. But just as I neared the hallway, I heard another voice, higher pitched, Trixie. "Keep your voice down," Lam whispered. "Someone might hear us." A smacking sound, lips on lips.
"Who, like Reese?" Trixie giggled between kisses.
"Yes, like Reese, I mean it. I don't want her to know about this."
And then moaning. Trixie's moans. Lam's moans. I don't know how long I stood there at the door. A minute? 2 minutes? 10 minutes? It seemed like an hour. I tried to make sense of the situation, but it was like I was paralyzed, the neurons in my brain in a freeze frame. Perhaps my body was generating some sort of defense mechanism, as if it knew that if I fully comprehended the situation right then and there, I would have broken. Or maybe I was already broken, and that's why these men kept searching elsewhere for the missing pieces. But isn't everyone a little broken? Just a tiny bit? What was it about me that wasn't enough for someone? My body snapped out of it before my brain did. I backed away from the door like it was lava on my fingertips, and I found myself wandering outside. The patio was strewn with statuesque, semi-starved bodies, like a magazine cover, or a graveyard. The sky was bubblegum pink, with cotton candy clouds. I found myself taking off my shoes. Without stopping to talk to anyone or listen to the chatter, I descended into the water. I went in, methodically, using the pool steps. The cold water took my breath away, but somehow I still felt numb. I watched my sundress billow around me like jellyfish, and I couldn't help but think it was a beautiful sight. I thought about staying under, just for a second. But the burning in my lungs brought me back up for air. When I emerged, gasping, I discovered Rhea sitting on the edge of the pool, her feet dangling in the water. Her golden hair fell in rivulets onto the lanai, and her enormous eyes were glossy. She looked like a very sad, very beautiful Barbie doll.
"Are you all right?"
she asked. I waded to where she was sitting and put my elbows on the tile. I brushed the hair out of my face, the water out of my eyes, and tried to focus on what she was saying. Was I all right? Again, my body responded before my brain did, and the words were out of my mouth before I could make sure they were coherent. They were, I think.
"Just needed to cool off. I know what you mean. It can get hot in those dresses."
"Yeah." I noticed there were bags under her eyes, and her face was swollen. The sight was enough to jumpstart the gears in my brain. I couldn't think about what happened with Lam, but I could think about talking to Rhea.
"What about you? You seem a little bummed."
"Oh," she waved.
"I'm fine. Just feeling a little blue."
"Well," I said as I got up and out of the pool, "tell me about it." I sat next to her, but not so close as to get her wet.
"It's just, well, I haven't really connected with anyone here. I'm starting to feel like I'll never find my person."
"Just because he's not here doesn't mean he isn't out there," I said reflexively. Up until then, this had always been my mantra. Your dream man is just one date away.
"But I'm 32, she whispered. "I'm old. If it doesn't happen now, I don't think it will ever happen."
"Hey, I'm 34 and I don't feel a day over 25. This wasn't entirely true, but I was trying to help a sister in need.
"But you have someone. Lam worships you."
I laughed loudly. It escaped my mouth before I could catch it. I could feel the dam that was holding my feelings back starting to splinter, and I held my chest in an attempt to stop the imminent flood. "Sorry," I said after I composed myself. I have a tickle in my throat.
"I think I'll be alone for the rest of my life," Rhea sighed.
If I had a dollar for every time I'd heard that declaration, usually from women, I'd be a rich, rich lady. I repeated a different mantra, this time Anne's.
"Maybe there are other ways for us to feel fulfilled."
37. Anne. This part of the island can only be described as a jungle. The vegetation is rougher, denser, and more tangled than the forest of palm trees that surrounds the mansion. The gnarled roots on the ground are like a thick web that traps us at every turn. I stare at the dappled sunlight through the canopy of trees, little pockets of white in an overgrowth of green. But I'm having trouble concentrating, like I have for the past 2 hours. I keep thinking about the email from the firm's founding partner and the potential repercussions. Hopefully, I'll just receive a slap on the wrist. But I'm aware they might terminate me. Jesus Christ, I could be fired. The thought makes me feel faint. I love this job. It makes me feel powerful. So much of my life is out of my control. But this is the one aspect of my life that feels stable. And yet I willingly lied to my partners. I used company resources for non-work-related activities. I took advantage of a new and vulnerable associate. My actions were completely inappropriate. I knew it was wrong, and I did it anyway. I worked 12-hour days for 7 years so I could be the youngest female in the firm's history to make partner. And now, I've just flushed all that hard work down the toilet. In a matter of weeks. Gone. I lean against the trunk of the nearest tree and try to slow my breathing. I feel a panic attack coming on. "Can we stop for a minute?" I ask Teddy.
"Yes, thank God,"
he says as he deflates, wiping sweat from his ashen face.
"I thought you'd never ask. Henry, wait up. We need to stop."
Henry has been 10 steps ahead of us the entire hike. He isn't ambling along as he normally does. He's walking quickly now. At Teddy's request, Henry groans and throws his hands in the air,
We're almost to the crops and livestock. You're the one who requested this, Anne.
I know. Just one minute. Teddy plops onto a fallen tree trunk, panting heavily. The sight triggers an old memory. An afternoon in the woods with my father, listing the names of the trees. Oak, pine, spruce. Before he lost his lumber business, he would quiz me on the different parts of the forest, ensuring I had a good understanding of nature. If I did well, and even if I didn't, we would conclude the day at my favorite place, Dragon Park. It's named for its 150-foot-long serpent sculpture, complete with various steps and nooks for climbing. That was, and still is, the primary attraction. But I wanted to spend my time on the merry-go-round. It wasn't just any carousel, either. It was this new, big-kid merry-go-round, painted the color of cherries. The ride was visible from a mile away. My father and I would spend hours on it. Even after he passed, I'd return to that spot, inhaling the scent of pine trees. I'd pray for a chance to start over, my feet hanging listlessly from a metal swing. I need a distraction. So, Teddy, tell me more about yourself, I say. Where are you from?
Los Angeles, he wheezes.
Don't tell me. Your parents are famous actors.
What?
Nick's from LA, too. His dad is Frank Kaiser.
Really?
Teddy's eyelids disappear.
That's awesome. I knew he lived in Hollywood, but he never told me what his parents did. I wonder if he'd let me meet them. Do the other participants know about this?
Shit. I probably shouldn't have said that. You know what? Let's actually keep that between us. I don't know if he wants that out there. When he starts to protest, I continue. So, your parents, what do they do if they're not in show business? His eyes roam the area, like he has to really think about the answer.
Accountants, he says finally. They own a small firm together. I started working for them after college.
Well, that's cool.
Not really. That's why I drink.
I laugh, and Teddy offers a coy smile. I push myself off the trunk of the tree and perch on the log next to him. Woodpeckers drill in the distance. A bird shrieks. Mosquitoes hum in my ears. Henry, do you have any bug spray? I ask. Henry is still in the same spot, hands on hips.
No, but there is a can at the house. We can get it if we keep moving.
He shows us his wrist and points to his watch. Okay, we're coming, don't worry. Why don't you join us while we catch our breath? Henry taps his foot, crosses his arms. Finally, he gives in and joins us.
Just 15 minutes, though, he grumbles.
We can sync our watches, I say as I tap my wrist. He rolls his eyes at my sarcasm. I continue anyway. Your turn, Henry. What's your story? How did you end up here? Henry bends down to tie his shoes.
I was trying to get a job as a waiter, he mutters as he tightens his laces. Miss Christina. She was eating at the restaurant when the manager threw me and my resume out the door. She helped me pick up the copies, said she would give me some work if I wanted. She was starting this retreat, and she needed help putting it on, organizing the activities, making sure the guests were comfortable, keeping an eye on things. She offered me more money than I'd ever make as a waiter.
That was really kind of her. Henry meets my gaze. He doesn't blink.
Not everybody understands Miss Christina's ways, but I do. She's the smartest person I ever met. She knows what she's doing.
I'm sure she does, I nod. Then something clicks. This restaurant, was it in LA?
Yep, Henry says. Sure was.
That's a bit odd, right? I prod. That so many people here are from the same city? Ned's damn reality show theory comes back to me. It's looking more and more accurate. I sit up straighter, making sure my cleavage is TV appropriate.
Not really.
Henry rolls his eyes again.
Miss Christina is from L.A. She just started the retreat. It makes sense that friends of friends would be the first participants.
Is that how you learned about the retreat? I asked Teddy. The words, through a friend of Christina's, are halfway out of my mouth when I notice Teddy has become paler. He's sweating profusely. Drops of perspiration streaming down his face.
Whoa, Teddy, are you okay? Here, drink some water.
I reach for my water bottle, but it's empty. I check his canteen, but it's out too. I peer at Henry.
Henry, do you have water?
He shakes his head. Shit. Okay, Teddy, let's take your shirt off. Maybe you're just getting too hot. I reach for his top, now completely drenched, and pull upward. Teddy sways gently.
Teddy, I need you to lift your arms up, okay? Henry, can you help me?
Henry comes toward us, but he seems unconcerned. He yanks Teddy's arms above his head, and I'm able to get the clothing off. Teddy still looks faint. His eyes droop.
Why don't you lie down? On your back.
He slumps onto the jungle floor, leaves crunching and twigs snapping beneath him. I lift his legs and place them on the nearest log.
Henry, do you have any food with you?
No, but there's some at the house. We only have a half mile left.
Why don't you go get some, something sugary, and bring it back to us? Water too.
Okay,
he huffs. I turn my attention back to Teddy. He's not sweating quite as much, and some color has returned to his cheeks. I wipe some of the perspiration from his forehead with a towel I brought.
I'm okay, he says. Just a little hungover.
How much did you drink last night?
Just 2 or 3 scotches.
I give him a skeptical look.
I swear, that's all I remember. I don't know what happens to me here. Forget it.
It's like what? My curiosity is piqued.
It makes me sound crazy.
Just tell me.
It's like...
He blinks rapidly.
It's like they're slipping me something.
Slipping you something? Like drugs? Eyes wide. He nods. 38. Anne. An hour later, we're touring the crops on the far end of the island on a tractor. The meticulous organization is a drastic departure from the wild nature of the jungle. Rows of sugarcane, sweet potatoes, yams, and taro line the land as far as the eye can see. As we travel farther away from the jungle and toward the sea, the second mansion on the island becomes visible. It's just a speck at first, but slowly, gradually, it transforms into a gargantuan development, towering over the crops like a larger-than-life minister preaching to a congregation. Various fruit trees, orange, banana, mango, papaya, stand sentinel to the left of the mansion. On the right, a barn for livestock. The mansion is similar in design to the participants' mansion. Spanish-style roof tiles, stuccoed walls, earth tones. The only difference is the lack of glass. There are no windows, there is no transparency, and the front door is just one massive piece of wood.
So, as I've mentioned,
Henry yells over the roar of the tractor engine, his mess of dirt-brown hair flapping in the wind.
We try to raise as much food as we can on the island because it's expensive to ship things.
As Henry continues to explain farming to us in a lazy, annoyed manner, I study Teddy. He seems better now. More color in his face, less sweating. But he appears completely spent. His shoulders are hunched, his eyes droop. I've been chewing on his admission that he thinks he might be drugged, but I can't make sense of it. If Christina were slipping him something, why would she drug only him? Was it some form of cruel entertainment? And if Teddy had these thoughts, why would he come back to the retreat a second time? I posited these questions to Teddy back in the jungle, but he didn't offer any helpful insight. He just kept shaking his head, saying,
"I don't know. I don't know."
And eventually, with a twinge of fear,
"Just forget it. I don't know why I said that."
Nevertheless, I decide it would be a good idea to watch Teddy's drinking tonight. I should be more careful about what I ingest, too. Instead of getting water from the bartender or the cook, I'll fill my glass with tap water. As we near the barn, the smell of manure and rotten eggs floods my nostrils. It's hard to breathe. When Henry turns off the tractor and gestures for us to get down, the lack of wind makes the aroma even more overwhelming. Teddy bends over, hands on knees.
"Oh my God, it smells like shit," he says. "I think I'm going to throw up."
"Fine," Henry sighs. He points to the crops adjacent to the housing.
"Just walk that way, and we'll find you after I give Anne the tour."
I want to join Teddy, but I need to see what's inside that barn. I need to have a good layout of the entire island so I can discover potential hiding places. Whether it's Christina or Reese or someone else who's doing the hiding, I have yet to determine. Inside the barn, the window slits provide only spotlights of visibility. It's dark, dank, eerie. Flies are everywhere. The large fans on the front and back entrance creak and moan with every cycle.
"I'm not sure why you wanted to see this," Henry says,
as he leads me down the center aisle, flanked by stalls of cows on each side.
"It's just a bunch of stupid animals that get slaughtered after they're done milking."
I cringe at his words. Most of the cows are unbothered by our presence, but one acts as if she's waiting for me. She's all white, no spots like the others, and she's smaller. Her head sticks out of her cage, her big brown eyes following me as I trail behind Henry. I stop when I reach her. Tags pierce her ears. Fleas swarm her face, her mouth, her eyes. She seems so sad, so alone, and I have the strongest urge to open her cage and release her.
"What are you doing?"
Henry asks when he realizes I'm not behind him. "Just getting a closer look." The cow's eyes don't leave me. Despite the smell and the fleas, I rub the tuft of hair on the top of her head. It's softer than I thought. Her eyes close, and her tail swings from left to right.
"Well, we need to keep moving. We're already behind because of Teddy."
I do as he says, but my eyes stay on the white cow as we exit the barn. Outside, dozens of pigs and chickens roam small plots of land separated by pens. The chickens are loud, clucking, flapping, screaming. Their beady eyes dart every which way. They look deranged.
"And here are the pigs and chickens," Henry says. "Now let's get going."
"Wait, that's it?" I analyze the small barn and its surroundings, disappointed. There's not nearly enough space to hide something. Or someone.
"Yep, now come on. Teddy's probably passed out in the field right now."
"What about the house? Can we see what's inside there?"
"Absolutely not. That's for the crew. It's off limits."
I scan the house as I follow Henry, searching for answers. I need to get inside. Teddy is invisible when we return. We call his name, but there's no answer.
"God damn it," Henry mutters, stomping his good foot. "I don't have time for this. You keep looking for him. I need to go pull the car around and get you back to the mansion."
"Okay, will do." I peer at the sky and offer a tacit thank you. I haven't had much time alone with Teddy, and I still need to ask him about Reese. I run down the aisle between the rows of sugarcane, yelling Teddy's name. Eventually, he calls back.
"Over here."
I hurry toward his voice, taking a shortcut through the sugarcane. The grass is tall, I'd guess between 10 and 13 feet, and I can't see more than an arm's reach in front of me. The plants whip my face, my limbs, my torso, but I keep running, running, running until I collide with Teddy, knocking us both to the ground.
He laughs, brushes the dirt off himself, and helps me stand. It's the most energy I've seen from him all day. "Where were you?" I ask as I take his hand. Henry is not pleased. He grins.
"I have to show you something. This way."
He makes his way back through the sugarcane and I follow. Now's my chance. "Hey, Teddy," I call as I whack the grass from my face.
"Yeah?"
"Did you know Reese Marigold when you were here last time?" He continues to elbow his way through the plants, breaking the stalks at the root and squashing the ground beneath. This was stupid. I should have confronted him when I could see his facial expressions.
"I did, yeah,"
he says eventually. How did she seem when she was here? Was she happy?
She wasn't particularly happy when I was here, but I left early, so things could have changed after I was gone.
Why wasn't she happy?
Well, this guy she was seeing, Lamb, had hit her, so she had a pretty nasty black eye.
My chest tightens. So it is true. Lamb hit Reese. That's terrible. Surely someone did something about it. Please, God, tell me someone beat him senseless, kicked him off the island, did something after that.
Well, not really. It was an accident. Lamb was in a fight with some ex-boyfriend of Reese's. She tried to pull him off, and she caught an elbow in the eye.
Wait, ex-boyfriend? You mean like an ex-boyfriend on the retreat? Someone else she was seeing?
No, an ex-boyfriend from before.
I stop. The stalk of a sugarcane snaps against my cheek, its leaves whispering in my ears. What was this ex-boyfriend's name, Teddy? Do you remember? He turns to face me, his lips contorted. Teddy, it's very important that you remember his name.
I can't remember exactly.
He scratches his head.
Oh, it was a car's name. Italian. Lamborghini or Maserati or something.
Was it Ferrari? Luca Ferrari?
That's it,
he exclaims. He takes my hand. My legs move, but I can't feel them.
Come on, we're almost there.
Wait, Teddy. What happened to Luca? Was he a participant here?
No. He was part of the crew. A cook, I think.
Did he remain on the island after the fight? My heart is jackhammering inside my ribcage as I try to keep up with Teddy, my sweaty palm loosening from his grip. A cut piece of stalk catches my forearm, slicing the skin open and drawing blood.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he stayed. Oh, here we are.
We emerge out of the sugarcane into an open field. Before us are hundreds of marigolds, red, orange, yellow. They aren't separated into rows or aisles like the crops. They are wild, unruly. The sight is beautiful, breathtaking. I want to wade into the foliage and collapse. Teddy breaks off an orange blossom and hands it to me.
For you, my lady.
I take it, studying the red thumbprint on the stem. I notice Teddy's thumb is bleeding. A drop of blood escapes his skin and falls to the ground, staining the soil.
39. Reese. Rhea wasn't super pleased at the thought that just maybe, she didn't need some guy to make her happy. Her eyes darkened.
I think you're wrong, she said.
I shrugged.
Maybe.
I was not in the right mindset to ponder the meaning of life. I wanted to get out of the conversation, but I wasn't sure how. As if Christina could read my mind, she entered the patio, four handlers in tow, clinking a champagne glass with a knife. Everyone, can I have a moment? The area fell silent. Christina's facial features were downturned and her eyes were dull. I just want to make a quick announcement before tonight's cocktail party. It saddens me to say Teddy is recusing himself from the rest of the retreat. Some personal matters have come up, and he needs to attend to them right away. He needs to leave in a hurry, so he wanted me to tell you all goodbye and good luck. I looked around at the participants to gauge their reaction. Despite the news, there was a palpable excitement in the air. When Christina turned to leave, an unreadable expression on her face, I turned to Rhea. She wasn't immune to the Schadenfreude.
"What do you think that means?" she said with wide eyes.
"I don't know," I said.
"Would you excuse me? I'm going to see if I can find him." "Okay, tell me what you find," she yelled after me.
I grabbed a towel from the stack kept near the patio doors. I dried myself off as best as I could, but I was still too wet to enter the house. I made a move anyway. I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to say if I found Teddy, but I knew I had to see him. A part of me thought he might be trying to get clean. I found him passed out again by the pool at 11 that morning. 3 hours later, he was positively sloshed, barely able to form words. If he was leaving to get help, I wanted to give him my number, just in case he ever needed to talk to someone, and perhaps a few words of encouragement. I made my way upstairs. My dress was still wet, dripping onto the hardwood with each step. I knew Teddy was on the second floor somewhere, so I checked each door until I found him. He was in front of an overflowing suitcase. "Teddy?" He jumped at my voice. When he saw me, he backed up until he was touching his belongings. He blocked the bag with his hands. He seemed completely with it. How had he sobered up that fast?
"You must be feeling better," I said.
"I do, yes. I got some food and some water."
His voice was steady, no slur. "So I hear you're leaving us?"
"Yeah. Hate to leave in a hurry, but it's something of an emergency."
"I hope everything is okay," I prod.
"Oh, yeah, just some family stuff."
"I see. Well, if you ever need someone to talk to, connect with me on Facebook or something. I'd love to keep in touch."
"Sure, will do."
He seemed to want me to leave, so I took the hint. I was about to head to my room, get out of those wet clothes, when something on top of his bed, next to his suitcase, caught my eye. It looked like a check. Difficult to see from a distance, so it was hard to be certain. He followed my gaze and quickly stuffed the item in his pocket.
"Is that all?"
he asked. He looked frenzied, almost frightened. So I lowered my head and left.
40. Anne. My hands are trembling. I clench and unclench the leather seats of the SUV as we head back to the mansion. Teddy is saying something, but it's distant. I can't hear him over the pounding in my ears. I can't believe Luca has been on the island this entire time, right under my nose.
"Anne," Teddy touches my forearm. "We're here. I was saying I had a great time with you today."
"Oh." I notice the car has stopped in front of the mansion and Henry is exiting the vehicle. My eyes follow him as he goes to the trunk to retrieve some of the items we took on our hike. "Yeah, same here."
"Do you want to take a swim before dinner?"
Teddy pleads with raised eyebrows. "You go on ahead. I'm going to grab some coffee."
"Suit yourself."
He looks dejected, but he leaves it alone. Inside, the house is quiet. When I peer out through the glass doors to the patio, I notice Christina is down on the beach talking to three of her handlers. They're having a meeting of some sort. Everyone seems serious. Now's my chance. I hurry to the kitchen. Nick is sitting at the marble island, drinking water and staring off into space. Why is he always just around?
"Well, look who it is," he beams. "How was your date?"
"Good, good. Do you know where the cooks hang out when they're not here?"
I assume back there."
He points to a closed door next to the participants' entrance. It blends in smoothly with the wall. It's completely white, even the handle. If you weren't looking closely, you'd miss it.
Things at the retreat are becoming weirder and weirder. Is someone slipping the contestants drugs? If so, why? And why did Teddy have a giant check? Is Luca still at the retreat? Tune into the next episode to find out. So don't forget to subscribe to CamCat Unwrapped. If you don't want to miss a beat, listen to Beneath the Marigolds now on the audiobook platform of your choice. All our books are also available in print and ebook formats on camcatbooks.com or wherever books are sold. Tune in to hear all our audiobooks as we release them right here on CamCat Unwrapped as serialized podcasts. The first two episodes of every book can always be found here, but subsequent episodes will be available for free listening only for a short time after their release. After that, they'll be gone. But don't worry, the audiobooks are available for purchase on Audible and other major retailers. CamCat Unwrapped also offers other CamCat books as podcasts. Also, check out our background episodes where we unwrap exclusive content related to our books, including interviews with the authors, editors, and other industry professionals. Before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you. Tune in again to CamCat Unwrapped, because CamCat Unwrapped is where book lovers meet.